And here are a couple of the stories NPR News is working on this afternoon. John Kerry is picking up some high-profile endorsements following his double-digit win in New Hampshire yesterday. That includes Jim Clyburn, South Carolina's influential congressman. And the chairman of the BBC resigned today, and the British News Network apologized for some of its reporting on the build-up to the war in Iraq after it was criticized in an inquiry by a senior judge in Britain. Details on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Although he was the longest-serving majority leader in the history of the United States Senate, the name of Mike Mansfield is not well known to the American public. Mansfield was a unifying figure who earned respect on both sides of the aisle. He later served as ambassador to Japan under First President Carter and then under President Reagan. In 1998, he made a speech he had intended to deliver on November 22, 1963. That was the day, of course, John F. Kennedy was shot. He read it in 1998, and in it, he lays out his long-held vision for the Senate.
I believe that every member ought to be equal in fact, no less than in theory. That they have a primary responsibility to the people whom they represent to face the legislative issues of the nation.
Mike Mansfield. Don Oberdorfer joins us now. He's the author of a new biography of Senator Mike Mansfield, and he joins us to talk about the senator's life and career. Good to have you in 3A, Don.
Nice to see you, Neil.
This was a remarkable man who, after the first, in the time of the First World War, so lied about his age to sign up and ended up serving in all three branches of the U.S. military.
Yes, I think he's the only person of his generation, certainly, probably ever, who served as in the Navy, then the Army, then the Marines, all the services that were then held, and he served in every case at the lowest rank, private in the Marines and the Army and seaman in the Navy.
He went,
but it did not make him very much feeling that the military knew what was going on. Most of his career, he was quite suspicious of military decisions.
He returned to Montana, went to work in the mines, and it looked like he was just going to spend his career there. What happened?
He was a penniless miner living in Butte, Montana, in a boarding house, and he met a beautiful young woman who was the daughter of a prominent businessman. She had a four-year college education, which was a great rarity for women in the late 1920s. They fell in love. She insisted that he get out of the mines and get an education. She helped him get accepted to the University of Montana, although he had not finished the eighth grade because he'd run away from home. She helped him become a professor of Far Eastern history at the University of Montana. She pushed him into politics, because her father had family had been in politics. She helped him be elected to the United States Congress and then to the Senate, and then helped him in his ambassadorship in Japan. It was a great love affair between these two, and he gave her credit in every conceivable way. It is now the Maureen and Mike Mansfield Library at the University of Montana, the Maureen and Mike Mansfield Foundation. And when they called him from the Montana State House in Helena and told him that they wanted to put a statue of him in the state capitol, only the second statue of a political figure, he immediately said, "If it's just me, no. If it's me and Maureen, okay." And that statue of the two of them is today in the state capital of Montana.
There's another remarkable quote asked toward the end of his career, how he would like to be remembered. He said,
"When I'm gone, I want to be forgotten."
And you note he may have meant it.
Yes, he might have. He turned down all opportunities to write his memoirs. There were some very lucrative opportunities put in front of him. He refused until I came along, everyone who wanted to write his biography. He turned me down when I proposed it. But one of his friends said, "Don't ask him, just do it." So we had we ended up having 32 interviews in the last 3 years of his life. He knew what was going on, but I never asked him to agree. And at the one time that I mentioned the dreaded word biography, he immediately said, "It's unauthorized."
The remarkable part about, well, there are many remarkable parts about his career. Of course, he followed Lyndon Johnson, remembered as perhaps the master manipulator of the United States Senate when Johnson became John F. Kennedy's vice president. The 60s, in a way, were the most prominent decade of his power in the U.S. Senate.
Well, he became majority leader in 1961 at the request of John F. Kennedy, who was his friend. And he was majority leader during the administration of Kennedy, Johnson, and then Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. So he led the United States Senate Democrats at a time of great achievements and great tragedy, namely the Vietnam War, which he felt was the greatest tragedy to befall the United States during his time, and which he felt was a great waste. He tried in every way to counsel Kennedy, who listened, and Johnson, who didn't listen, not to go into Vietnam.
We're speaking with Don Oberdorfer. His new book is Senator Mansfield, The Extraordinary Life of a Great American Statesman and Diplomat. And as the relationship with Lyndon Johnson, clearly they'd known each other extremely well in the United States Senate, but as majority leader, Vietnam really tore things apart between them, didn't it?
Yes, indeed. Actually, Johnson had picked Mansfield as his deputy when he was majority leader, and Mansfield was majority whip. And they agreed on many things. Mansfield helped to get the Great Society legislation passed. After all, he was in charge of the Senate Democrats. But they disagreed about the war. And on three different occasions, in 1964 and 1965, when President Johnson made steps, prepared to get much more deeply involved, bombing North Vietnam, sending hundreds of thousands of troops to fight, he called his senior leaders to the White House, to the Cabinet Room, to tell them what he was going to do. This was Secretary of State Rusk, Secretary of Defense McNamara, McGeorge Bundy, the National Security Advisor, the Joint Chiefs, and others. He also invited Mansfield as the Democratic leader of the Senate and invited John McCormick, the Speaker of the House. And he went around the table asking each person, did they agree with this course of action? On all those three occasions, the only person in that room who said, and said it flat out to the President's face, looking right in his eyes, don't do this under any circumstances. This is going to be the wrong confrontation for the United States. It's going to lead to a massive and prolonged involvement that will not be successful. The only person who objected was Mike Mansfield.
The Great Society legislation that you mentioned he was critical in included incredibly important measures like the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act of 1964 after the assassination of John F. Kennedy. He later went on, he was instrumental, you write, you argue, in arranging or helping to bring about the trip of President Nixon to China. This, of course, is something that's normally accredited almost entirely to Henry Kissinger.
Well, he had been working on this. He had been to China as a young Marine in 1922, briefly, and he was fascinated with the Far East. He had been a professor of Far Eastern history at the University of Montana. And he was in touch with the Chinese, asking to go to China years before Nixon got involved in it. But he was counseling Nixon to please open the door to China. Actually, the Chinese invited Mansfield before they invited President Nixon. As soon as he got the invitation, he went to the White House and told Nixon and Kissinger. And they pretended to be pleased. But in fact, they were very agitated that a Democrat might go to China before they went. And so when they got their own invitation a little while later, they secretly worked to call off the invitation that Mansfield had received. Actually, he was the first member of Congress to go after the president. And when I told Mansfield some of the stories, inside stories, which is only really revealed by the Nixon tapes, which have now become public in the National Archives, he said, well, that's no concern to me. I always said the president should go first. He was that kind of person.
There are extraordinary stories about his ability to reach across the aisle in the United States Senate. A really wonderful story about Ted Stevens of Alaska, then a freshman who had been promised by a committee chairman that his bill would be considered. Then it wasn't, and he rose to object on the floor. Mike Mansfield put him down for being out of order, but when he found out what it was about, he went and did what?
He went and had the legislation recalled, which is hard to do in the Senate. And basically gave Stevens his time and objected to the tactics which had been used to ignore a commitment that had been made to what was then a freshman member of the Senate. It is now one of the longest-serving members of the Senate.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that kind of courtesy being extended not only to a member of the opposite party these days, but to a freshman member of the opposite party these days. Mike Mansfield, of course, finished out his career serving two presidents of both parties, that an extraordinary fact in and of itself, Carter and Reagan, as ambassador to Japan, and served deep into his 90s and served a wonderful and distinguished career. Don Oberdorfer, we owe you for this marvelous biography.
Well, I was greatly privileged to have a chance to spend time with Senator Mansfield in the last 3 years of his life. And if this book can help to keep his memory alive, I will feel greatly justified, and I'll feel very good about it all.
The name of the book is Senator Mansfield, The Extraordinary Life of a Great American Statesman and Diplomat. Don Oberdorfer was here in Studio 3A. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News.